Hey now, it's Central Division. I'm David Coggins with my good friend, Michael Williams. Hi, Michael.
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm well. I'm actually coming at you from the Central Time Zone, from New Orleans.
How's that feel?
It feels good. It just warmed up today. I'm in the Columns Hotel, which is a pretty incredible place. It's kind of being redone. And I'm in residence. I haven't been in a hotel this many days in a row in a long time. And it's not quite open yet. So it's like a lot of jackhammering and other things, but it's pretty fun.
You trashed the room? You drink the whole mini bar?
Well, there's no mini bar yet. And, you know, I'm approaching my month of non-drinking. So it's been a pretty kind of mineral water vibe here.
And have
really good, I'm sorry to say the word mocktail, but I just like make a gingery and I see on my bill, it says mocktail, which is a total humiliation, but it's great. And like the best Bloody Mary mix. So I have a virgin Bloody Mary, which somehow sounds better to me. And living the life.
Maybe they do that mocktail thing as like because some companies like won't pay for, you know, like they won't reimburse for alcohol or something, right?
So there's
rules around that. So I wonder if they do that or if they do it to just make everyone suffer the indignity of.
Totally. I'm suffering.
I was going to say, I bet you've been digging into all the Instagram ads of fake, you know, like non-alcoholic wine and every other, like there's a million of them.
Well, at a certain point, you just want something that distracts you from it. I don't really drink non-alcoholic beer. If I'm not drinking beer, I don't need to drink beer. I don't know. I haven't gone down that path.
But if you don't drink, non-alcoholic beer is good.
Yeah, for some people. But for me, it just makes me think of what I'm missing. I want like a total something else. I don't know.
I'm saying if they don't drink for real, then, like you don't drink.
Course cutter, of course.
Yeah. You know, that I guess this is a perfect segue. I don't want to like jump in and just
do it
and start listing things off, but you know, we're going to talk about what you call, I'll let you say it. You say what we're going to talk about and then
enthusiasms, current things we're into that are not timeless that we swear by, just what we're actually into day by day right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And little flourishes of excitement. Yeah. Is that what you want?
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's this company called Lo-Fi and they make vermouth and they make all these aperitifs, these mixers basically. Or they're not mixers, but you know, they make vermouth and I found that instead of just drinking every day, like for a calendar year straight, which is what I've felt like I've wanted to do, these Lo-Fi aperitifs, a little vermouth and tonic is like a cocktail.
I love it.
Essentially, you know, and it's just really light. It's not like, you know, it doesn't sort of, you're not feeling anything really. It just takes the edge off a little bit. It's nice. And I feel like that's something that I bought them at Flask and Field. I know they've got, which is a really wonderful wine and liquor store, in downtown LA. And I know they're available fairly widely, but I can't recommend them enough. They're just great.
How did you hear of it the first time?
I think I discovered it in the store. I mean, making the case for an actual retail store, right? Right. I it's so hard to shop online. It's so hard to discover things. It's like imagine the mandate of, all right, David, go read the New York Times online, read the whole paper for the day.
Yeah, forget right? it.
And it's like, that would just be such a nightmare. And I know you would never do that. No one would attempt to do that. But to me, like that's the stress I feel a lot of times shopping online. You just can't see you can't see everything that's there and you're never going to make it through 20 pages. You
know? Right. Right. It's a strange situation trying to find something new. And if you even want something new, you don't even know this category exists necessarily. And then you're in the,
yeah,
but it is funny when you find something that is new and then all of a sudden there's a million ads served to you. I don't know when that just became normal and expected. Like I look at Lo-Fi on Instagram or something, let's say, and then all of a sudden I'm getting right and left all of their competitors also serving me ads. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I don't really always believe that like, oh, Facebook is listening, you know, to whatever you're saying. And then you get the ads. But I did talk smack about, and I I did talk smack about Dick's Sporting Goods, not to pick on, and I'll always go shop at Dick's when I'm, you know, when there's one nearby. I don't have a problem with Dick's, but I was picking on them a little bit in this like golf related article that Nylon did. And someone, I was messaging with my friend about it on DM on Instagram. And then the next day I got ads. I never went to their site. It wasn't a cookie. I was like, it must have like scanned the ad. I don't, or scanned the conversation. I don't know like how that even works, but that kind of creeped me out.
Yeah. Any words that you use are, they seem to know how to harvest that. It's a wild situation.
I want to figure out how to harvest that data for the, you know, for the contender. We'll throw all that weight behind, you know,
yeah, exactly. They're like pretentious opinions. This sounds like one of my readers. I can connect with this man or woman.
Stuck in a generation earlier.
I was going to say parting like it's 1949. Well, I like, you know, it's funny. A lot of bars down here and other places now are really, you're talking about lo-fi, serving good, just non-alcoholic things. I mean, kombucha on tap, I am here for it. I don't care if it's, I'm sure I made fun of that at some point in my life and it is a little bit into the goop zone, but I am 100%, I like kombucha anyway, but when it's on tap, for some reason it feels more festive or something. That I was at a eating outside at a restaurant in South Carolina in Charleston, and they brought it in a wine glass and it felt like very good. I felt like I was participating in a big way in the meal and liked it. And I go to a place in Livingston Manor when on my way up to go fishing in the Catskills, and they have, you know, you put it in your whatever, you could do it in a growler or what, your Yeti or whatever. And I very much enjoy this kombucha on tap. It feels, I don't know, it's like eating pickles, like fresh pickles or something. It's very, I'm pro kombucha. I don't care what it means.
I think that's interesting. I wouldn't necessarily say I expected that from you, but I also like kombucha on tap, and I don't think one of those people. Like if a sandwich has sprouts on it, I don't want the sandwich. That's just me. And you know, anything with chia seed, I'm probably like not into.
Oh, I hope this gets served to you on Instagram. I hope somehow all these sprouts are show up, sprouts with a Z.
Any sort of like health, if the restaurant has health in the name, I don't want to eat there, you know?
I hear you.
No, but I think, you know, there's that place Gasoline Alley in New York City, that coffee shop, and they have kombucha on tap, and I used to always get it there and I love it. You know, what I'm sort of surprised about is what you said, you're here for it. Who taught you that phrase?
I'm here for it. Did I learn that from Chris Black? Is that
bad? It sounds like some Chris Black stuff right there.
I'm here for it. I guess if you're here for it and it's some out of print, obscure English writer, it's one thing. But if you're here for kombucha, then it's something else. I think if you're here for something, it's got to roughly be within the cultural conversation.
I think if you said, hey, I'm here for kombucha, someone will say, sir, that was 5 years ago. Kombucha's gone.
I think I'm much better at not being here for things like Super Bowl halftime show. I am not there for it. whatever most people are there for, I am definitely not there for. I hit the snooze button.
No one is interested in the Super Bowl halftime show. You know, I mean, actually people I think are, but no one should be.
Right.
You know, the other phrase that I really hate is hits different. That hits different. I just can't. Anytime I hear that, that's like 100%. If someone says 100%.
That's tough. I'm half of a very obscure one. This actually goes into the manner zone, where if you apologize and you say, oh, I'm sorry, and someone says, you're fine. I'm not saying I'm not fine. You're fine. Oh, you're fine. I find it really putting you on the wrong foot. You're fine. But don't tell me if I'm fine or not fine. I didn't think I wasn't fine. I was being polite by apologizing to someone that was probably your fault in the first place. Don't tell me I'm fine. You're fine.
I think fine is a very tricky word that in America is sort of glossed over a lot. But then I think in the UK, maybe it feels a little bit different. Like it's a little too passive aggressive. Mm. And also like in a relationship standpoint, I think anytime anyone says I'm fine, like definitely starting, not furthest from fine you could be.
Exactly.
If you say that.
No, it's also the tone you said. If someone says, how do you like this meal that I made for you? And if you say, it's fine. You might as well just dump it into the sink. You know, I mean, if you're like, it's fine. It's you're basically, it is exactly not that. You're trying to go out of your way to not say it's bad, whatever the thing is. Yeah. What did you think of the TV show? What about my recommendation? What about my manuscript I just gave you? Oh, it's fine. Ew, God.
That's funny. What else? What are you feeling enthusiastic about otherwise?
The spelling bee. This is why I wanted to do this. I'm obsessed with the New York Times spelling bee. I signed up for the New York Times puzzle app. I don't do the crossword anymore. I normally do the acrostic, which I'm obsessed with, which is every other week in the Sunday paper. That's when it's a quote from a book and you have to solve some clues. And the first letter of all the answers is the name of the author and the name of the book. And then it fits into the quote, which is always usually funny. And if you sign up for the New York Times puzzle app, you have access to all the old acrostics, which I've done as they've come out over the last 20 years or so. And now I've actually done them again, which shows that I'm totally insane. But every day, if you, besides the acrostic and their whole puzzle kind of backlog, you can also do the spelling bee, which is really easy on the app, New York Times app, and it's just kind of coming up with combinations of words from seven letters, but you have to use the center letter of the seven. And if you use all the letters, then you get a pangram. Anyway, and that thing is very satisfying, and I can't start my day until I'm at so-called genius level. I feel like a genius. I totally fall into it. When it tells me I'm a genius, it makes a little sound, and I'm like really feel better. Like whatever works on children at school, like it completely works on me. Like if they give you a gumdrop or I don't know what they do now, but I'm like being told I'm a genius, even though I go on to Twitter and see that people are what they call queen bees, which means they've done all the words, which I don't deal with that. But just getting to genius level makes me very happy.
Is there a whole Twitter? Are you like in a Slack group about this or something?
No, Emily Nussbaum, who's was a TV critic for the New Yorker, and is kind of a Twitter presence and pretty funny and very much herself. Sometimes she gets into that and she'll just get mad if something isn't considered a word. And then that gets me down into a rabbit hole of spelling bee Twitter, which is not really where I want to be. But sometimes if other people are struggling with it, it's kind of funny. Or if other people find out that a certain word isn't, like logia was not a word the other day. And I was really revved up about that. But then I try to stay calm and just work my way through it. Our friend Randy Goldberg does it as well. So we sometimes share very discreet text because you don't ever want to give away a word to the other person. That's huge spelling bee etiquette. And if you're ever on spelling bee Twitter, you never say, I can't believe X was a word or Y was a word. That will get people so mad at you, and rightly so.
No spoilers.
Right.
Exactly. This sounds like a fascinating, aspect of social media that I'm so happy I'm not a part of.
Oh yeah. No, it is really bad. But I do like other people's, I mean, you know, I like Cleveland Browns Twitter, which is very amusing to me. I just like when other people are really like Toronto Raptors basketball Twitter is pretty funny. There has to be something not that's less fun since they won the title, but it has to be some group of people who consider themselves something bad has happened to them collectively, coming together to either get mad or feel more sorry for themselves is always going to be interesting to me.
It's true.
Like Jets Twitter is great. Yeah. You know, anything where it starts at like typical blank or that that's of course happened to us blank. And then they refer to certain things that they've all suffered through. I mean, I'm just right there for that.
You're there for it.
Yeah, it again. Exactly. I am.
You can't help yourself.
Oh my God. It is weird how language that happens with language where you find yourself, how phrases or trends get passed along like that when we don't even realize that we couldn't locate how often it's from hearing them in a podcast, to be honest, or other people. And then it's like they are transmitted through society.
Yeah. I made these, I haven't done anything with them yet, but I love all the corporate speak, and
of course
I hear this, you know, with friends and loved ones sometimes that work for big companies or startup-y companies. I hear all the phrases like land the plane, you know.
Yeah, like, that's a big one now.
Parallel path, instead of just saying like, let's both work on this and then we'll, right, you know, like talk about where we end up or whatever, or like next week at our meeting, we'll discuss it. Right. No, you circle have to back. Say parallel path because that obviously makes so much more sense. so I made all these like little just cringy corporate speak sayings into kids' t-shirts. So they don't like actually, you know, they just, they're contextless. They just say, you know, parallel path and hit the ROI or hit the KPIs and, you know, what's the ROI and things like that, that I just hate. And I just thought it was hilarious.
I love it.
Some kid running around, but I kind of pick up on some of those words too. And then you'll see it once or you'll start to see it sort of bubbling. And then at a later point, you realize like, this is everywhere.
Sure.
Everyone's using it. It's crazy. And it like shoots around the media all the time.
Well, it's funny.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah. No, that there's, it's, I think you come to this point where you say, is it easy for me to just use this accepted phrase, even though it's bad? Or do I want to take a little bit longer without saying the phrase circle back, right? Mm-hmm. Or whatever the annoying thing is. And the way these terrible business phrases survive is because everyone's making the same decision to just go along with it out of ease.
No, but I think everyone feels like they have to say it.
Oh, I see.
To be like in the club, in, you know, in the clubhouse. Sorry, David, I know that's a personal point of interest for your clubhouse. No, it's like, so you're like, you're in the know, you're up to date with what's going on in the business world. So you can say all the jargon bullshit.
It's proving. Yeah. It's straight up. It's jargon showing that you're relevant. And it's like people looking at their phones to make themselves seem busier or something. They would never want to seem like they're spending 2 minutes just thinking about something.
Yeah. I mean, it's not about what you actually produce. It's like about how busy you seem. Right.
Oh my
it's
God.
Like, that's like the worst thing in the world.
I was just thinking about this because I was looking at some photos of Pitti Uomo and getting from years past and getting really mad at particular Italian goofballs. And they're walking up and clearly expecting to be photographed. And they're talking on their cell phone and smoking like a Tuscan cigar. And I'm like, no one does this. You're walking into a place. There's no reason you would be talking to anybody. Text them maybe. And also like, why, like, are you serious with the cigar? There's 800 people around you. The thing smells vile, even though I kind of like them sometimes, but it just, and I was getting completely mad about something that happened about 2 years ago that just was served to me on Instagram Discover page.
That's funny. Do you love genetically modified fruits?
Well, not in my relationship, of course. You know, Emily's obsessed with all natural things, and I am.
You had to sneak your non-natural GMO modified kombucha.
I brought back an apple the size of a basketball from Japan. Honey, I'm home. That's the strangest thing. Well, that our usual Japan mention is very symmetrical, oversized fruit.
That's like a funny gift that they do. It's like the perfect fruit for someone in the hospital that costs $200 for a cantaloupe. It's like a legit thing, which is ridiculous. I love genetically modified fruit, though. The sumo is my next little enthusiasm.
What's the sumo?
You know, it's like that. It's like an orange that they've like made to peel super easy.
Oh, nice.
Right. It's like a big orange. It's like one of those little Halo tangerines, which is like a branded fruit, right? Which is absurd.
Oh, nice.
Do you know what I'm saying? Do you follow?
Yeah, the easy peel for sure. The Halo, I don't know, but I'm following.
It's like someone invents in a lab a special fruit, and then they create a brand around it, right? Because they like own the formulation for breeding these things together so they're easy to peel and delicious, whatever. But there's one called the sumo, and it's like a big orange that peels super easy, and they have like a little knob, and they're only around like in the winter, like at a certain time of year. And it's funny because I'm doing all my shopping on like Instacart, whatever.
Yeah.
And I can't ever get them because they're not listed. So I'm like, do I have to go into the store? Do I have to like take the risk of going into the store just to get these things?
This is how much you love sumo. It's funny, masking up.
Yeah. I got to the point where I was going to go. And then my wife actually bought me some. She found them, which was nice.
So she doesn't mind you eating these something out of a lab. That's love, Michael. I think stick with her.
I think she gave up on me a long time ago.
She's like, fruit, genetically modified fruit is better than nothing. If you're like, listen, sweetheart, it's going to be either my carb-centric diet. If you want me to diversify, it's sumo or no-go. I love it.
She's like, you know, it's just hard to explain to our children who can't have all the, you know, stuff. But, you know, it's like Goldfish or like, I don't want to slander Pepperidge Farm, but.
Oh my God, Goldfish are the best.
It says like sourced from plants or something. It's, oh, no. It's like so ambiguous.
I remember the Goldfish, which was one of the accepted things in the Coggins house growing up, I think because my dad loved them. But then at a certain point, they put faces on the Goldfish, which I found really not good.
Unsettling.
I wanted it to be anonymous, based from plants, carbs, than not ones with personalities that I was eating by the handful. Wait, how did you have a sumo for the first time? This is what I'm always fascinated by. Like, when do you cross into a new, a genetically modified fruit?
You know, here's what I'll say. One of the greatest, look, I want to preface anything I talk about that's pandemic related. Like, I'm not, you know, I understand this is a terrible thing. Okay, so just that's out of the way. One of the greatest disappointments of the pandemic for me has been I can't go to the grocery store because I love going to the grocery store. Mm. Like, I love like the biggest, most like commercialized, like gigantic suburban grocery store, right? Like,
you've got a cart.
It's okay. So big. They have like 50 versions of Goldfish, not like one, you know what I mean? They get like, they go deep. The assortment expands to like all the unnecessary, ridiculous things that all these like terrible food makers put out. That to me is like, when it's like, you can find the Uncrustables, the taco Uncrustables, right?
Wow.
Like the weirdest thing that no one wants, but like they have it, you know. Wow. I'm like intrigued by that. So yeah.
I've always been fascinated by people's habits when they get into like the way they shop, of course, food shop, because especially in New York, you're going to smaller places, specialty stores, farm markets. No one's driving anywhere. No one's pushing any carts. You're not taking it out and putting it in the trunk of your car. Maybe that's more in the European style. And I was in the Catskills with our friend, Matt Hranick, and he said, have you ever been to PEX? And there's one in this town that I often go to, and I usually go to the farm market, the kind of Goop accepted version. And he said, you got to go to PEX. And to go into this store, which actually is great and has a lot of local things, with Matt Hranick, is one of the great experiences. He knew one day a week they'd send in clams from Massachusetts. And they have this local thing from a butcher up in Pennsylvania. And with him, and he's totally enthusiastic about all these different things, a lot of which he grew up with in Binghamton. And I thought like, Matt's good in a lot of ways, but in PEX, it's kind of the best version of Matt. And maybe we go now with Michael Williams to some huge grocery store in LA. I'm sure you have a favorite one. And like, that's a way to like get to know someone. And then you just have either the TV show 40 minutes in the grocery store or with Michael Williams, with Matt Hranick. I think this is good.
I want to bring Tyler Florence with me to go grocery shopping, the chef. I feel like Tyler's going to have a lot to offer in that regard. I think that's funny. You know, have you ever been to Peck in Milan?
Yes. Oh my God.
How about that place?
That's any specialty store in there's a different version, not of Peck. I can't think of it right now, in Florence, that Taka took me to, very close to the Duomo. I'd never knew about it. And on the street, you go into this absolutely gorgeous store that's been there for, you know, 150 years, for crying out loud, and the perfect butcher and beautiful coffee and incredible wine and all sorts of things. And it's not huge though. They also have a very nice pharmacy. We've been talking about that sort of thing. And you just think, this is like the way to do it. And at that time, I thought every 6 months when we were at Pitti, I would just go and get another thing of olive oil or another thing of spice or another beautiful dried pasta. And of course that totally stopped.
Actually, like, that's kind of my play when I go to Florence. I'll always stay in an Airbnb. I know you do frequently. I mean, if I'll stay in hotels, the hotels there can be very nice, but typically I stay in an Airbnb. Yeah. And then I'll go to the grocery store and just, you know, buy groceries. And then
love it.
A lot of times, like the wine at the Italian grocery store, not so like good. A fancy market, just like a regular grocery store, they'll have like Fontoti, like the little Fontoti that doesn't get exported and is inexpensive. It's like the daily whatever. And it's like, you know, 10 euro. And you're like, this is it. You know, I found it. And you buy some prosciutto, you buy some whatever. You have like food at your house and you don't have to eat every meal like, you know, it's kind of hard at times in Italy that you, I mean, I know it doesn't really bother you, but it's not easy to, if you're there by yourself or you're there for work. Yeah,
do you want to eat 8,000 pounds of pasta? You know, it's funny. The first time I ever went into an Airbnb was with you in Florence. And you said, we were meeting someone who was bringing you the keys, and it all felt very exotic to me. I said, are you sure this is okay? This is never going to work. And I thought at that time that Airbnb was you rented it from the person whose place it was. And this guy showed up, he had about 800 keys. And we walked up the staircase right on the Arno, though I don't know if the apartment looked out onto it. It was very nice. And I thought, this is so ahead of its time. I felt it was very daring. And now it's the most basic common thing to do.
You know, Florence in the winter is very nice.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's there's no tourist crowds, really. I mean, it's very limited.
January pity, man. That's the jam.
Yeah, it's inexpensive to go. Rates are, my only advice is bring a blanket, you know. the blanket technology and napkin technology in Italy is just so sad. Like, you'll just freeze because the blankets are all like hard and thin and like there's, you know. So I just bring my own. I bring a roll of paper towels and my own blanket.
I like it.
I'm just kidding.
Now that I just heard myself saying that's the jam, which is, I think if for me to adopt a phrase, it has to at least be 10 years old and obviously like behind the times. And then it's like, not funny, but at least acceptable. So,
100%, 100%.
Yeah, exactly. So when 100% has been done out of the like collective culture for 5 to 10 years, and I'm going to jump on 100%.
The phrase I heard that I really love is instead of saying on steroids, this is one I actually like, and I've been trying to incorporate this as much as I can into my daily life. But instead of saying on steroids, which I think is a terrible term,
yes,
I like to say, oh, that's the third stage of the rocket. Right? So it's it's just so stupid.
To get to the point of using that, you just, it's like when you have a $2 bill or something that you're waiting to use, and you, that's the third stage of the rocket.
$2 bills are, by the way, still in circulation, and you could just get them at any bank. I use them all the time. They're great for tips.
That is the greatest tip because it shows that you care. I meant to ask you, and I thought I'd forgotten. Are you on the standing desk now? Are you standing?
Yeah. Can't you hear the difference in my voice?
I just saw you rock slightly, and I was reminded that, yeah, you're standing. I'm maybe this is the, we'll look back and when everyone uses a standing desk, and I won't believe that it's like using Airbnb ahead of the early adapter. Now, see, there's a phrase that just entered the lexicon, and now that's not a trend. Early adopter is just part of, that's like Malcolm Gladwell making something part of the way we talk.
Malcolm Gladwell, it's funny, he's a very polarizing figure. People either love him or don't like him.
I think he peaked at when that first book happened, and then he's got that cadence in the way he speaks, and it's very hard to keep coming up with counterintuitive, but what if it turned out that everybody was wrong? And you're like, okay, thanks, Malcolm. Are we wrong about? Just get to the point and tell me if what I'm wrong about. It's like, what if genetically modified sumos are the healthiest thing you could eat? What if we were all wrong? Thanks, Malcolm. Yeah. Save me some time.
I listen to the podcast like once a year, and I do like some of them, especially if you're like, there's a lot of traffic. It's soothing to me. I like the stories. But yeah, his whole thing is like pretty hilarious. But he did his audiobook. I'm expecting the Optimist audiobook. I can't wait. Are you going to be recording that?
No, I told them I didn't want to record it. So they're sending us.
What?
Nobody wants to hear it. I mean, they've already got enough of Coggin's voice on the podcast. I might do the afterword, but they're sending, this is behind the scenes of High Publishing.
Is this a secret?
This can be shared. They're going to send us three different readers that they work with. And then we get to cast and it's very funny. It's sort of, this isn't like picking the actor who plays you in a movie. It would be more like the extra that plays you in the movie, but it's someone whose voice will animate my words, and it will be interesting to see how that plays out.
I think you should get Michael Barbaro. Do you think he's free to do it?
Oh my God. Anytime anyone on the Twitter says, can a good podcast have a bad voice or a hateful host? I presume they're speaking about not us, but not me, but Michael Barbaro today on the daily.
Chapter 4, Argentina's my jam. wait, what's your other phrase? I already forgot it. So bad. How am I can't forget it.
I've forgotten too. 100%. Fly fishing is 100%.
100%. Oh, should I fly to Patagonia? 100%.
That, if I heard that conversation, which sounds vaguely like something that might happen between us, but I heard two other people say it, I would, like, from one restored Range Rover driver to another, I would just want to end my life. Should I restore the S70 or whatever, the Defender? 100%, bro.
Oh, 100%, bro. I'm here for the restoration. What else do you got? What else are you enthusiastic about? What's on your list?
What's on my list is, this is a straight up product recommendation that I'm enthusiastic about because it's changing my habits, are Bombas dress socks. So Bombas, which I've always been into, well, not after they became a huge successful thing and Randy sent me some, I got very into them.
But once you got tipped off for right. free, once they came and paid their respects to the altar exactly. of Coggins, right?
Well, so I love Bombas for their thicker socks, which I wear with desert boots and fishing and more kind of heavy duty things in Blundstone, stuff like that. But now they've made thin dress socks in very nice colors. And I normally don't wear socks. I slip on loafers, all that sort of thing. And these are absolutely delightful. They're thin, they're nice colors, they stay up. All the kind of Bombas technology that if you've ever worn them, you know, there's nothing, no unwanted seams, not overly elastic, but they don't fall down. And it kind of changes my footwear game. And I am 100% pro. I guess it's because I haven't worn dress socks in probably 8 or 10 years for a variety of reasons. And now it's getting me back into some dress shoes even. And the colors are nice too. So I get on the Bombas dress socks. And I don't want to hear anything about, oh, it's a little more than you want to pay. Like it's not just the socks that'll last for a long time. It's the shoes that you don't wear that you're bringing back to life. So I look at it as an investment in shoes.
Are Bombas expensive? Is that what you're
I don't know. I guess if you add 3 and 4 and you don't really want to be spending a bunch of money on socks, which I understand at one time, it's the same way. Like I used to buy boxer shorts individually because I didn't want to spend it exactly a time, $120 on 6 pair or whatever it was. But
that was a good ad read for you, you know, just to be able to do that. Like it was so natural. I think that should be the standard for advertising on the podcast.
We all have friends who have companies and do things and they're successful at them, but every now and then what they do, it's very funny if someone, you know, is a musician or an actor or a writer for that matter, and you think maybe you're not going to like whatever it is that they do. And then you hear their album and you have to communicate in a polite way. You can't say, oh my God, I was surprised at how good it was. Cause then it made it seem like you didn't think it was going to be that, but I freaking love Bombas socks. I didn't think I was, you know, I've talked with Randy about it many times, but I'm pro Bombas. So
I like Bombas socks as well. So David, do you wear those Bombas when you wear your Uggs or do you not? I mean, do you wear just go barefoot with the Uggs?
Men in Uggs. I'm not there for it. Can I say that? Did I do that right?
I'm not here for it.
What else? I don't know what else I'm into. What are we, how mad are we at Clubhouse yet? Are we maxed out on Clubhouse?
No, dude, your crypto game is on fire because of Clubhouse. I mean, I think that is impressive. The gains that you're making over there.
I feel psychologically Bitcoin is just the perfect personality. It just is a perfect barometer for someone's desire to, like if you ask someone if they like a car that's red or not, it tells you a lot about them, right? And if you ask, I'm sure there are 10 objects that if you showed people like a huge house, or someone's going to say it's too big, someone's going to say it's perfect, or things like that. Like, would they ever want to ride on this type of motorcycle or like it's, but if someone's into Bitcoin, it tells me very much about them. And it tells very much about me that I just get very nervous about it. Like, don't invent money. Like, I think we've got enough money. I don't need more money. I might want more. cash, but I don't need more forms of money. And it just makes me very nervous. And I, and actually the fact that those twins are doing it too, I don't know about
the Winklevi.
Yeah.
The Winklevoss twins.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a strange thing, but I also think, and I've sat in on some strange clubhouse conversations, not too many because I don't have a lot of time to do that sort of thing. But I have been roped into a few. I'm interested in like in futurism, right? And it's like to watch Blade Runner and they, you know, their prediction of 2019.
Right, right.
To watch that in 2021, right. Which I did the other day. I was like, this is absurd. You know,
of
like
course.
It's so far off from even being close. So I love it. I'm not that deep into, you know, the future, but I find it very curious. And when you see a movie, it's like the easiest way to sort of absorb all that, right? Because it's like right in your face. But there's conversations on Clubhouse about Bitcoin and how it's sort of like setting the stage for like a stateless future, right? And I'm kind of like, oh, that's like interesting to think about. Yeah, I agree. I think, you know,
I think my problem with Clubhouse is that it's just phone calls. Like we could not do this podcast if we were on the phone. I need to see you. I cannot be talking. And phones make me nervous too, by the way. I'll add that to the things of my neurotic jackpot. Jesus. But I don't want to, if I could see the people talking, I guess that would be television, but I would, or maybe it's a form of Zoom that would also be annoying, but I'm just a bunch of voices.
Yeah. I think if you worked in finance, right, and you are used to doing conference calls about earnings, you know, or a webinar, you know, then I think it's probably like, you know, it feels pretty normal. I don't know. Like to me, in certain ways, it's kind of interesting. I don't know. We don't have to go too deep in that, but I want to tell a funny little story that just came to mind. You know, I was at the Brentwood Country Mart a few years ago. And I was having coffee with a friend, this guy, Eric Wind, who's a vintage watch dealer. His company is called Wind Vintage. And he just like sells the best vintage watches. And he's super awesome guy, super knowledgeable. Anyway, we're just catching up. He's in town. He's got watches he's like selling and buying. And who knows? He's like, you know, he's like buying and trading and selling and whatever. So he has like a, you know, a little like roll of watches that he brings to the coffee and he's showing me what he has. It's, you know, just like catching up and whatever. So this gentleman sitting next to us with this woman is sort of curious what's going on. And he, you know, I think he says like, oh, is that a Rolex, whatever. I can't remember what it was, but, and Eric says, yeah. And it's not just a casual watch conversation because Eric's a, you know, super well-informed expert. And so they have like this sort of highly nuanced conversation about the watch. And we talk a little bit with the gentleman and then eventually we go back to our coffee, we wrap it up and we leave. And as we were getting ready to go, or actually as he was getting ready to go, the gentleman, he, you know, says, I might be interested, you know, here's my card. I'd love to, you know, connect. So like he leaves, we weren't really sure who he was, but we thought maybe he was someone, right? Mm-hmm. And anyway, we left and a couple of days later, Eric told me this story and he said, you know, I got an email. The guy sitting next to us was David Mamet, right?
No way.
Yeah. And he's like, I got an email from David's assistant and it was a typed letter that he had given to his assistant. And then she scanned it and emailed it to Eric.
So good.
And
so
I was good. Like, I was like, this is the most David Coggins like dream scenario of all time.
Did you think of this because he wrote uncredited the script of Blade Runner?
I mean, I thought about that, but also like you being such a Luddite that it's amazing.
Well, that's great. I love it. I love everything about that. And you know what? Oddly, the best to me, the problem with futuristic movies is they always try to make too much of a statement and it's always the flying cars or something. Yeah. By far the best futuristic movie is Her, because that is just slightly different.
Yeah.
It's not very few changes. And the fact that he talks, I just watched it again. It's absolutely, I really one of my favorite. I think it's a wonderfully sensitive movie. And the fact that when he's kind of running through the street, when he's trying to talk to her and he's just speaking and nobody really notices him, that to me feels very sadly the way we're going to move into the future. It's that we're caught up in our own conversations and completely anonymous to the people around us. Forget flying cars. It's that you've got an earpiece in, you're talking, everyone expects you to be talking, but not to them. And then if you stumble, it takes a while before someone even notices.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good call. I was going to make a joke to say that there's some chatter on the Slack and, I run a Slack that's just about you on the side. And there's some chatter on there that your life partner is actually just a computer. It's not a real person.
I wouldn't be a Luddite though. I need to have some,
that's a good point.
I write, good night in a fountain pen and to Emily, and she writes back
you slip it under pigeon. Her door. Is that what you say? You sleep in separate rooms.
Carrier pigeon comes to my window.
The thing about that's interesting about that too, and thinking about the future in movies, I think that there's a lot of times there's a general acceptance that everyone conforms to the futuristic, just right. like talking about clothes, like the futuristic right. attire of the right. moment, that right. it's universal, right?
Right.
And we know just in reality, like that there's never acceptance of anything, even the most exactly. legitimate things aren't accepted, right. you know? And that's part of like the human experience. And movies, I don't think do a good job of
totally,
like, in 2000, 21, the year 2100, like some guy's going to be dressed like Out of the Wild Ones, you know?
No, that's really funny because our friend Whit Stillman, he complains about that, but in historic films, because he says they always try to make it look so much like 1959 or whatever year, and everyone drives a car from that year and dresses like it's from that year, and everything is trying to communicate so much that year, as if in any time everyone is like right now, someone's driving a new car, an old car, a medium-sized car, yeah. dressed in a way that like doesn't communicate exactly 2021. And that once you pointed that out, it really is strange and oddly why his movie like Last Days of Disco is much more kind of accurate, because they're, some people are in suits, some people are really in the disco vibe and different, but it doesn't announce itself. I mean, there are very specific things like what type of taxi is in New York or what the signage would be like mm-hmm. then, but it doesn't just like, not everyone is screaming in the same voice. We're living in this year, the same way that like someone still has an older cell phone or something,
Yeah, totally. I mean, what's interesting is that I was, kind of just thinking about that. Well, that makes me think about the break between the moment when no one was holding up their phone at a concert,
right,
like, or at seeing some celebrity, to like, there's that famous picture where it's like the Pope right. in, 10 years apart and, whatever. Everyone's got their phone in one and no one has their phone. But there was this like oral history of McCarran Park Pool. I think I've mentioned this once before, but and just like, this was like the pre cell phone era in terms of video. You're not going to be at a show capturing, right. Like taking pictures the whole time, or like trying to record the whole song like an asshole.
Right.
And it's, to me, it's like funny that like, that was very much like at a point that just start, then it just took
it
off.
It became that way.
Like,
right.
Yeah. Now it's just insane unless they like ban your phone right. at the show, which is interesting.
Well, my feeling about that is if I'm at a concert and so when I was in my like Depeche Mode, like went on tour and I saw him quite a few times, Enjoy the Silence comes on, I just take my phone out, hold it by my waist and record it so I can listen to it later if I want to. If I need to see it recorded, someone at the show who's in the front will put that sucker up online or from the previous night in wherever it is, Berlin. And no one is sitting there looking at a Bon Iver video when he's still saying acoustic songs 8 years ago.
Yeah, it's a good call. It's a weird, I don't know. It's like just speaks to the syndrome of social media where it's like, you have to like, if you're not documenting it, you're not there, or you didn't experience it, or you're not cool or whatever,
But the irony is that I don't think anyone is watching these things anyway. Like, I understand it's like, okay, when it will be, as for parents too, your daughter is like playing soccer for the first time, you definitely need to like get a little bit of that. I don't know if anybody, and I'm not saying you're going to do this, needs like the whole game, like just 30 seconds of running. That's about is like, there's probably like, what's the average amount of time we want to watch a video of whatever the concert performance, the soccer game or whatever it is. And I'm guessing it's all under a minute.
Right? I mean, the reality is like most of those things you can't ever find. they're not really accessible. And it's like right. the one time you're moving or something and you dig out the box and you like maybe sit down and watch it. And it's not like our house where every Sunday at 9 a.m. we have a viewing of our wedding ceremony, you know, just to remind us, to just, you know, remind us of our love for each other.
Oh my God. The completely video wedding. It's honestly, if I think people feel this attachment, if there was just the photo of it, whatever the thing is, not just the wedding, like you just need something to feel sentimental or loving toward. It can be a video, it can be a photo, it can be a letter, and you just, whatever the object is, that is where that emotion is set upon or directed towards. And unfortunately now we have 8 zillion video files when it should just be a photo and a little bit of hearing someone's voice speak or whatever it is.
We're going to stream your wedding on Clubhouse.
It's going to be huge. It's going to be in an earnings call. The futurists are going to be all over.
We'll just roll the room right into like the next crypto talk. It'll be
crypto. The thing that's just funny to me about like Clubhouse, or it could be anything, is that it just shows, it's as if like we invented a new meal and it's decided how we're going to interact. And it, like, what habits have we learned since Facebook, since we all got onto Facebook, and how we interact with each other, who are the stars of this thing, who are not, who's reluctant, who's enthusiastic, how we embrace it, who uses it for status, who does it well, and it's just very funny to me how we, it's almost like, what, I don't know if we're living in a simulation. This is the simulation, you know, like this is such an example of, if someone just said, we invented something, you can join it, it shows how many followers you have, you have to write a bio, you have to choose a photo, you have to decide who your friends are, you have to decide who to follow. And this is like a test in a way, or just a revealing situation about the way we interact with a freaking meaningless app.
Are you on Facebook? You have to be, right, to have an Instagram.
I'm on it, and it's everyone who interacts with me on Facebook, which is older than I am. So if I have big news, so book related, I go to Facebook, drop something down, and my parents' friends comment on it, and it's kind of nice.
They're like, whatever happened to little David Coggins? Oh, he's written a book.
Yeah, exactly.
He's an author.
Exactly.
I heard Michael Barbaro was doing the audio on his book. I'm a big fan of the day.
Can you imagine anything worse? I feel like every now and then I look at my Amazon page for The Optimist, and I feel like people are accidentally buying the audiobook because it's cheaper. And I can see that the sales are going up, but they're going to be very disappointed.
I can't wait to listen to the audio version of that. It's going to be great. Are there a lot of pictures that we're going to be missing, us audio people?
No, sorry. There are illustrations opening every chapter that are quite charming by Derek Branny, formerly of Partners in Spade. He's a great artist and illustrator and designer. Awesome. And if you need those, I don't know how audiobooks work exactly. If you get a file of all those types of things, but I'll text you one if you need it.
Let me know, because I'm an audible.com subscriber and I will be using my one credit to buy your book. So let me know like how much money you make off that.
I'm
looking forward to that.
Audio in Kindle is where the action is, because there's no cost for that, you know?
I think you should get like a significantly older gentleman to do the reading.
I think that's a safe assumption.
I had one thought. I don't know how you're doing on time here.
I'm good.
You have to get back to, you know, lounging around, reading, whatever you're doing down there in New Orleans. Binet's, I don't know what you're up to.
I've been selling a standing desk in my room. I'd ordered one ahead of time. It wasn't ready.
Could you put a bunch of pillows on the desk? Because I'll be standing. That'd be appreciated. Do you subscribe to like the Henry Ford Model T color scheme for cars? Like, do you believe in any colors for cars, or only black?
So I've always had black cars and enjoyed that. Black Swedish cars, black Saabs 2 and black Volvo 1. And I, though, now am interested in older I like older cars that have a particular color, but a real color. Most new car colors are some variation of metallic silver or fog or mist. They have a different name. And those don't seem like real colors to me. An older car that's brown or green, a real color I like, but on those old cars, you know, like a car that's a late 60s, 70s, those colors were good. And they looked like they were done with intention, and not the marketers had nothing to do with it.
So
why do you ask that?
No, I was just curious, cause I was thinking about it and I just was thinking, I bet you're someone that hates color. You know, well, you mentioned the red car thing, you know,
I don't like red for car.
What if it's a Ferrari?
You know, that then you're kind of a crazy person if you're driving a red Ferrari. I don't feel like that person and I, unless the person is Magnum PI, have a lot to connect with about. I don't think it's a good use of society's time to have red Ferraris. I feel like if you do need a Ferrari, it should be black.
That's interesting. I think Ferrari, I'm going to oppose you on that opinion. Okay. And I'll present the counter argument to your point. I think if the only acceptable red car is a Ferrari.
All right. It definitely is. It's just if you're in a red Ferrari, do you look like kind of a jerk?
I mean, if you're in a Ferrari, you're kind of a jerk.
Okay. Right? Okay. So we're already past that point. Oh, in that case, then I don't. If we accept that, you know, it's like how I don't really like smoking a cigar in public. I'd rather do it in private. Mm-hmm. Because most men, especially when they're together, there's a lot of cigars happening, not really a great vibration. So I think it's not as if I only apply this theory to the Ferrari. I also apply it to things that are more in my own life. And I don't think, you know, the same way you don't want to be drinking out of a snifter in, you know, a hotel lobby, just swirling your cognac around like some sort of, I don't even know, Count Dracula.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Ferrari would really be my thing. But I can appreciate it a little bit. I think it's kind of unique. I get what you're saying though, and all that stuff.
To me, it's like if the car is old and really desirable, like an old Porsche, it should at least look like it might possibly break down. Like to me, it's like that. Like if you're going to try to drive a car that looks so that maybe is going to get people excited about it and maybe envy you in some way, they at least have to have the feeling, well, I don't know if I really want to take care of that old Jaguar myself. And that way you're charitable enough towards your audience that they don't feel too envious of your lifestyle, TM. Yeah.
I think actually British cars, old British sports cars in green.
Yes.
That's probably like the quintessential, you know, that if done well, can sort of be the pinnacle probably.
And with a nice, you know, true leather interior. We were walking in, here in New Orleans, and there was a beautiful old Jaguar like they have in Withnail and I, but not rusted out, with main license plates. And you just thought, you know, that is very cool.
Yeah.
And it also looked like who knew if it was going to start or not, but it was just fantastic. Like in front of an old mansion here. And you just thought that's kind of where the action is. A main Jaguar in New Orleans. I'm there for that.
Yeah. To me, that says that person is a member of AAA. That's what that says. Yeah,
exactly. Whatever happened to that BMW that is that the old one? Can we have an update on that? Did that find a new home? Is that living in your garage? Is that in the Michael Williams Museum in Ohio? Where is that?
That is, you know, it's where I go through phases with that car. So I went through a phase where I was interested in it, and then I took it out to pick up my mail, and I was stranded four times in a span of an hour. And each time I thought I'm going to have to call AAA you know, and just how annoying is this? And then it would start. I finally was able to get it home, and then I just parked it and left it. And I haven't thought about it since.
You have to drive to get your mail? Or is that
no, I have like a mailbox. I have like a post office box.
I see.
Because I don't, you know, I don't want everyone knowing, you know, where I live. I'm just kidding. Because we were moving around and whatever. So I thought, well, I'll just make this my home base. yeah, I still have that stupid car. You know, I need to do a little work. Then I'm going to unload it and I'm going to dump that money. However painful that works out, I'm going to put that money right into my kid's 529 account.
I like it.
And never
like
think it. About it again. That's the only way I could justify, you know, the pain that it's about to inflict on me.
There's definitely something about the that moment in a car or in certain things where you're like, if I get out of this situation, I'm done with whatever that thing is. If I get, or, you know, if I get off this airplane, I'm never flying this airline again. If I get off this, out of this car, I'm never going into it, trying to start it, not at my house or whatever it is. It just is. And then when it happens, you're so grateful and you forget how mad you are. And then you wait to deal with it until you absolutely have to.
You know, I almost sold that car to Matt Hranek. Did you know that?
I see, that's maybe what I was vaguely remembering, but I kind of forgot.
So I think I was driving it and I posted something on Instagram and Matt was like, "What's up with that?" Whatever. Or then I was in New York. I saw Matt. He's like, "What's up with the 2002? And he's like, "I love those cars. I had one," whatever, you know, Matt is. And I was like, "Dude, you should buy it. You know, you want it? Like, should take it off my hands. I'm ready to get out of it." And so he comes out to LA. I saw him. He's staying at this like beautiful house in Santa Monica. I think that house sold for like a ton of money. I saw recently, because I'm on Zillow a lot. I don't know if you knew that about me.
Oh, that's another thing I'm always on every morning. Totally.
Zillow?
Of course. I don't know, Vinyl Haven, Maine. No, never going to move there, but I have a few houses I've got my eye on.
Vinyl Haven, you have to take a ferry to, right?
Exactly. An hour and 15 minute ferry. I looked that up.
That's a no-go on that. That's a definite no-go.
It's the 2002 of real estate.
You're like, look, only occasionally do these huge winter storms come in where this ferry ride is terrible. So like, right, exactly. You'll probably be fine. It'll be okay.
So Matt wanted it. Well, you can't really make a deal with him.
Wait, let me tell you the story. I know Matt's like, you know, a vicious negotiator. It's like, right, exactly. It's like some bazaar, you know, where Matt is living for the negotiation.
Right. Of course.
You know, I'll just probably lay down because I just want out of this car, right? But I thought, well, it's Matt. I'm going to negotiate hard just to, you know, to make him enjoy it.
Because he's a friend, right? Exactly.
I actually proposed a fair price. And then I knew Matt was going to negotiate. And I was like, you know, I'm going to be fair and Matt's going to try to poke my eyes out on this thing. So, so he comes out, I show him the car. I'm like, here, take it for the week. You know, I don't care. It actually like was fairly reliable at this point, right? And it is now. It's just got some things that need to be addressed, but I don't want to deal with it. Anyway, so he takes it. He's like, yeah, I like that. And it's great. He gives it back. We talk. He's like, I'm into it. You know, I want to like send it to my mechanic, you know, or my friend's mechanic. It's in the Valley. Could you, you know, do you mind? Like, and I'm like, well, you know, I can't say no to someone wanting their mechanic to look at it. That's very reasonable. Right. The problem is like, it's in the Valley. It's, you know, this is pre-COVID, but I'm like, it's kind of, you know, I don't want to go out there, leave it for 2 days, then go back out there. I go out to this mechanic. I'm like, whatever, I'll do it. I go out and just give me a hand signal if this gets too long.
I like it.
So I go out to the mechanic and the minute I get, it's like the most beat up, rundown garage you've ever seen in your life. Like, it's like one tiny step away from being a junkyard. Terrible, terrible place. Guy comes out. He's like so disheveled and dirty and just like, you know, this is not like a type A, like, nice German garage, right? So I'm like, all right. And the minute I get there, the guy's like, you're going to sell this for how much? Like, this thing, you're nuts. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, I'm the seller. You can save all of this for your client.
Right, right.
You know, just call me when it's done, you know, and I'll come back and get it. And so like the guy was nuts and it was like very abrasive. And I'm like, oh God, this guy. So Matt, you know, I go back a couple of days later. The guy eventually gives the report to Matt. And, you know, I like don't even hear from Matt for like a week. Right. So now I have like hours invested into, you know, this potential deal. And eventually Matt's like, yeah, the car, like, you know, I thought about it. Like, I don't think I want another car. And like, you know, thanks for like dealing with it, whatever. So he didn't end up buying it, which is totally fine. But the whole thing was like another reason why I don't buy an old car.
So this isn't all coming together because I just watched David Mamet's writing, directing film, House of Games, a little scene, late 80s sort of kind of thriller with now in that if David Mamet was doing this, he would have you drive out to a place in this, in the House of Games world, which Matt kind of subscribes to, where when you drop it there, it's a guy who Matt has totally arranged, no matter what the car was, what condition, says, what? You, this is all part of Matt's negotiation. No matter what you bring, he tells the guy, he says, now, when my friend Michael Williams comes out here, no matter what the car, what you think, just say, you're selling it for this much? You're asking this? Nah, this thing's worth 10 grand. That's all part of the House of Games. Matt and David Mamet's House of Games, for sure.
Well, so the funny thing was, like, after I talked to that mechanic, I raised the price on Matt. I said, you know, I want more now. I had to go out there and deal with that guy. Don't try to game me.
That's incredible.
I bet Matt actually probably did that, knowing Matt. The good news is, well, he's too cheap to subscribe to the podcast, so he'll never know.
Unless
someone tells him.
No, he's one of the, and this is a group of people who still, nothing but Howard Stern for Matt. It's just Howard Stern. Like, if he's going on satellite radio, Howard Stern, forget these rarefied podcasts or whatever we're calling it. It's just, it's Howard time.
Which, amazing. You know, yeah, you keep it simple, you know. Maybe we instead of giving Matt the idea of, like, the grocery store shopping idea that we had, we just take that and sell that directly to Esquire TV on our own.
Okay. Well, I have to get Matt on. I was talking with, for some reason, loved ones in my life are suggesting we have more guests, which I tried not to be take as criticism. The idea was floated that we have Yolanda on. And then we deal with Matt later.
I actually think that would be way more interesting. So for those that don't know, Yolanda is Matt's wife. And I think it would be fun to just talk about Matt a lot with Yolanda, right? And try to do a deep dive into, like, his psyche.
She's a hugely successful woman and travel expert in her own right, former creative director of Condé Nast Traveler, and one of the coolest people.
Yeah, I think Yolanda is a bigger get anyway. Yeah.
Right? We'll see. We'll get her assistant on the line. It's good to talk to you, Michael. That was fun. I'll talk to you next week.
All right, David.